Our first speaker is a longtime friend. Actually, I knew him as a little boy, running around the house, running around the dome. And my first classes were with his dad, Peter Kelly, and I used to go up to Lakemont to take the classes. And I can't tell you how much wonder and amazement the opening of the doors of radionics was for me. It was so exciting. It was so wonderful to find out that we don't have to be limited. There are many ways of doing things, and that we have access to those many, many ways. One little incident that I remember very well was that Peter was showing us reagents, and he had a particularly interesting reagent, and my intuition really was pricked by that reagent, and so I jumped out and went and got some, and I didn't know I could do that, but I went ahead and balanced myself with it while he was talking. And it was an unusual experience for me. And then when he had passed the reagent around, I found that I'd already been balanced with it. So it was very exciting. So Ed Kelly has been delivering radionic instruments and equipment and information to the world for 37 years. His sister company, Baytar, USA, produces focused vibroacoustic sound therapy systems that allow writers to literally feel their favorite music, every note and drum beat, as a sonic energy massage that melts away physical pain, emotional stress, and or mental anxiety. Ed took the leadership position in these firms following the untimely passage of his father, founder Peter J. Kelly, in 2004. Its topic for today is Radionics Demystified. Let's give a warm welcome to Ed Kelly.
Thanks so much, Ludi, for those kind words. It's really a of the many presentations that I give around the country and sometimes even in Canada. It's always most special to come back to the USPA, where I remember hotel rooms with the luminaries of radionics, Hieronymus, Bearden, guys like that, having all-night bull sessions, and I would be whooshed off to bed and just a rug rat around the feet. But to be able to come home again is really just a tremendous honor, and to have this leadership position in the USPA has been a wonderful gift over these last few years that I wasn't looking for. It kind of came up and there it was, but I feel like we've really been able to make a difference sharing this information in a context where people can use it in a meaningful way. So my topic is Radionics Demystified, and when I took over the business, my whole goal, my father was the engineer. He was the electronic engineer who had designed his own instruments and had the joint venture with Hieronymus way back in 79 and all this sort of thing. And I had always sort of taken it as an act of faith, and I had seen the results, different times on farms and in homes, around the world over the years. But I had to really know it for myself. I had to figure out what it was and why it worked and how it worked and try to get a real understanding of it. And so what we're really going to do, a lot of people think of a radionic instrument as a black box or just a mysterious device that you turn some knobs and set some settings, but after that, who knows what's really going on. And I felt like if this was something I was going to get up and talk to people about, it was going to be something that I have to really understand. And it's an evolving discussion. If you come take my actual hands-on class, you'll see there'll be parts where I tell you, here's something that we figured out. Here's a mystery that's unmystified, literally. And then there's the parts that we're not so sure about. There's still some, a proper scientist, I suppose, mainstream person would tell you is either magic or malarkey, one or the other, depending how kind they are. But we've seen the results, you know, again, over 37 years. Dad sold his first radionic instrument in 78, and it was one of those things where he was building them for himself and then building them for his friends in the USBA, and then next thing you know, it was strangers, and lo and behold, we were in business. And so what I'm going to really hope to do today is show you literally under the hood what goes on with those instruments and how they work and why we think they do what they do. Everything is energy and vibration, and what we see, you know, that's hardly, I chose that particular graphic in particular because it's something that we all remember from, you know, 10th grade chemistry class. Everybody's in agreement when you get to a certain level that everything is energy and vibration. It's only in the manifestation and manipulation of that energy or using vibration to impact energy that we start to have some questions, you know, a gap between mainstream and esoteric science. But to me, if the fundamental building block, everybody's in agreement, then how could everything else not spring from that same building block? It's the wellspring from which we all flow. This is a really nice example of the whole idea of everything is energy and vibration. That's, of course, a Curlian photo plate. And then you can see that that fern is shown on the same, shown under Curlian light. And you can see that that vibratory pattern coming as that energy is expressed on the plate there. Likewise, again, somebody's human hands there on the plate. It's all the same building block. We're all the same. It's all the same essence, whether you're a plant or a cat or a walking around person. Only the organization is different. Likewise. Now, one thing that we further stress, a lot of times, like with this presentation that you'll see, you guys are kind of the easy group to talk to. A lot of times it's a group of farmers at an ag meeting who have never heard anything of this kind, and so we really do break it down and go into great detail. But again, fundamentally, I think everybody here is totally comfortable with this idea of resonance and vibration. And whether that is the Western model of religious thought, you'd say, where you see the angel there and she's got a halo coming around her, or you go to the Eastern thought where we have or classically Eastern, it's a lot different than it was when I was a kid. When you start talking about chakras with the average person, you got a pretty good odds that they know something about it at least, and that wasn't always the case. But I like to show that contrast that, you know, we all have this idea, all the different cultures, East and West, if you can use the right labels, we see that the core idea is the same. Now, radionic instruments are radios. That's literally where the word radio in radionics comes from. They really, and you'll see as we go through this, they really are radios, old school, as would be designed in the 20s and 30s, which is when Hieronymus, our only fellow to hold a patent in the United States for a radionic instrument, that he was an old radio engineer for both the U.S. Army and the Rainbow Division of World War I, and then in his professional career afterwards, and very well regarded all through that time. It wasn't until he went around the bend that that he started not to be universally recognized for those talents and his many, many patents and contributions that were not even remotely radionic. There's an example of the classic Kelly radionic instrument. The tuning apparatus is patterned after Hieronymus's two-bank tuner, variable capacitor tuners. And so that's just a snapshot to give you an idea of what the basic instrument looks like. But let's go a little deeper. The sample well is the microphone for the instrument. Just like on a radio station when, you know, the sportscaster is going to lean in and give that information, share that information with the world about, you know, how the Cubs did that day, he's going to use a microphone. And our sample well works the exact same way. There it is outside of its case, and you can see it's a simple copper coil We use a flat copper tape to build a helical coil. And then on the right there, you see a diagram out of Wikipedia of what a microphone, how a microphone works. Well, a microphone, they need to have a diaphragm because a sound wave is a mechanical wave, and we're trying to convert that into an electrical wave. And with the sample well on an instrument, you're already dealing with an electromagnetic field. The aura that comes off of you is an electromagnetic field, not a mechanical wave like our voice as the air moves over the, you know, voice box and that sort of thing. So the only difference between the two is that we're using, on a regular microphone like this one, we're using a diaphragm, and then we use a magnet to amplify the signal and send it up the pipe there, whereas our magnet is in the instrument, but the coil is exactly the same. You induce that field within, you know, whatever you put in there, whatever you put in that sample well, whether it's a hair off the cat or a quartz crystal or an essential oil, all everything, because everything is energy and vibration. It's all giving off some kind of a hum, and that passive coil there just, you know, soaks that up and sends it on up the circuit. And that's just repeating that idea. The variable plate capacitors are the tuning forks of the system. On the left there, you see a photo of the actual air trimmers or variable plate capacitors that are in our instruments. Like if you were setting those rate dials, that's what's turning on the other side. The bottom half of that thing is fixed, and the upper part rotates. Those little fins rotate. And on the right, you see a picture, again, Wikipedia. That's an AM radio, pre-digital. So up until 1960, thereabouts, when the transistor, well, really when the digital tuning era arrived, which is a bit later, if you were mischievous like I was and we were taking apart the family electronics, you would find a device very much like that one. And that's, you know, that's mainstream science. Those little plates act as an area for the charge to build. They're capacitors, which are just a kind of like a battery that allows a charge to build. And so depending how much surface area is on those plates, and then the angle between those little rotating fins determines whether you're tuned into AM 750 or AM 1650, or if the plates are a little bigger, you're in the FM band. That's just how radio frequency tuning works. It's exactly the same in our instrumentation. We just use the exact same instruments or components of that time. The other big thing is, and you'll see this again, like in either of the little, I'm going to do an evening workshop, I think, on Sunday, and then a whole deal for 2 days. The beauty of this, and I really use this tuning fork idea to really suggest this whole idea of resonance. These instruments, when we're tuning them, when we're in the analysis phase, they're not plugged in. There's no electrical power provided. These little tuning forks resonate spontaneously based on the energy of whatever you put in the well. And here's an example, same exact idea. These are piano tuning forks. It's middle A, 440 hertz. And I can tap this one. And if you hear that, that one starts to sing on its own because it's exactly the same. It's in perfect resonance. And so when I tap this one, the other one will start to sing on its own because it's in perfect resonance. Likewise, so there's our 440. I can stop that, and the singing continues in the other tuning fork. So it would work the same if we took this and put it on a guitar string or on a piano. The piano string would start to sing, or the guitar string would start to sing spontaneously just because of mechanical resonance. These plates work the same way. As we tune through that dial, when we find that point where we're in perfect resonance with whatever's in the well, these things do not sing with a sound wave, but they sing, their magnetic field is the same. And again, I'm not the engineer, so I rely on engineers to help me when we're breaking new ground or trying to understand this stuff. And I have this wonderful guy. He's a genius and has a list of patents a mile long. And he considers the whole thing to be hogwash. But when I put him to the question, he's like, well, yes, they would start to sing. Even the biggest possible skeptic you could possibly have, total agreement that those little tuning forks there, those little fins, will start to sing on their own just exactly the same as we did these tuning forks right here. unfortunately, we don't have wireless in the hotel. There's a fantastic video that many of you have probably seen where they have a sand on a metal plate, and they put a speaker under the metal plate, and as that speaker changes, goes through the frequencies, the geometric patterns that you see on that metal plate, that sand and salt will move around and change radically with 1 hertz difference, 2 hertz difference. It turns into a whole different thing, complicated geometry. And so I urge you to check that out on YouTube for yourself later on. It's just spectacular, and it makes it so easy to understand how, just like Royal Rife was using speakers and light to directly pump the body with sound waves to achieve resonance with different organs and that sort of thing, that they would respond in different ways. The geometry changes as the frequency changes. So that's a bit of a tease. Head to YouTube for that one. We use an induction coil both to hand off information and so any guesses? Who thinks that the piece on the right is the radionic device, and who thinks the left? So a show of hands, who thinks on the left is the radionic component? Couple. How about on the right? Who thinks the one on the right is the radionic device? That's a crystal radio. The one on the right is a crystal radio, just like the folks would build in the 20s and 30s, where they could change the resonating crystal and pick up the Grand Ole Opry coming across the country. It's the exact same technology. Here's a peek at that same instrument that we saw in the first place. Up under the hood, you can see the variable plate capacitors there, and then in the front you can see the solid state amplifier. That coil that we were just looking at is inside that silver box, which has two purposes. It serves as both a Faraday cage, which a Faraday cage is just a fancy way of saying that electricity, just like water, takes the path of least resistance. And the same with any kind of other signal information. We want to protect our delicate signal that comes from these subtle energies by putting it in a cage, because, you know, everybody in the room here probably has a cell phone. And if they don't have a cell phone, they're in a wireless environment, or there's just all this other electrosmog that we're trying to keep from getting tangled up with our broadcast. And so we put that little silver box around there. The wave comes along, hits that box, runs around it, and keeps on going. The classic example that everybody's familiar with is lightning. Everybody knows that if you're in an automobile, you're protected from being electrocuted if lightning were to strike the car. And so, any guesses why? Kind of hinted already. The tires. You're insulated because of the tires. But in fact, if you think about it, the lightning just jumped over a mile of open air. That last 6 or 7, 8 inches between your car and the ground are nothing to a voltage of that size. It's because the electricity wants to run around the skin and then jump into the ground. Same reason birds can sit on a 10,000 volt wire and be perfectly fine. It's easier for the electricity to run down the wire. That particular little shape is also a geomantic symbol, which is to say it's built to be a physical representation of the sephira that was first shown in the Kabbalah. And this was a project of my father and our own Bob Butlick, who's passed on now, but Scott's father, Bob. The two of them used to work together on these projects, and they looked at the sephira as it was shown in the book, and they, you know, being a couple of engineers, they said, well, that's a blueprint. That's not just a symbol it's not just a symbol that has no meaning. The sephira, the whole goal of the sephira was the ancient attempt to understand how God's pure energy, as they thought of it in those terms, how did it get from just being raw energy to a lectern in front of me? How do we get a physical object out of something as pure as energy? And it was an attempt to understand the stages of manifestation. And so all of our instruments have that coil on the inside, or that sephira, because that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to manifest some kind of change on our farm or in our home or with our animals or whatever that animal might be. This is an example of a worksheet that we use, and it's a little pixelated there, but we have a variety of worksheets, some that we came up with ourselves, some that come right out of Hieronymus's playbook from way back when, where you can set these different frequencies, and you see there it'll say like alkalinity, radionic rate, and then you would set on those two dials 26-41, and then we would use our tuning dial to see how much resonance is there. Likewise, soil and plant analysis. There are literally thousands and thousands and thousands of these rates that people have explored and developed and tested. And at any given time, you are perfectly, the trained operator is perfectly happy and welcome to sit down and scan for the frequency that's most useful at this moment, at this time. You know, I have an old cat that's, my wife's a veterinarian, and so we collect old animals. And he's had this chronic nasal congestion thing, and if he's not flowing good, he doesn't eat well. He's a little kitty anyway. He's only 6.5 pounds, and so if he doesn't eat a few days, you know, you can't last that long at that age. And when he was, literally the day before we got on the road to come up here, I looked at him, and it was noon, and he still hadn't asked for anything to eat yet. And so I didn't go, you know, we could have done a whole big analysis, but I only had a few minutes. And so what I did was sat down and scanned on those dials, just what's the radio station? Just like if we're in a strange town, we might scan through the radio dials to look for, again, the sports scores. I've just tuned through those dials with a focused intent. You know, the most powerful tuning instrument of all is right between your ears. And sat down and said, okay, what can I do for this cat to just give him a little boost to be a little more feeling good? And tuned through the dials. And when I found one that was resonating well, which was interesting, I was not only getting a strong stick on our resonant plate, which is our antenna. We'll get to that here in just a moment, the antenna of the system. But also I could feel in my own sinuses this like resonating experience. And then tested, asked that question, is this a good broadcast to make? You know, it's a bit of a dowsing step to make sure we're doing the right thing. And turned on the amp, picked out a couple reagents, again, just by going through the thing and seeing what resonated. You know, that evening I was asking my wife, hey, what is this chemical that was in this test tube that somebody gave me? I didn't even care. All I cared was that it was going to make the cat resonate at a higher state of energy than he was as it was. Turned on the amplifier, and literally within 10 seconds that cat stood up, sneezed out a big old slug of material, and demanded to be fed. You know, and so it wasn't an all-day process to go through this thing. It was just scanning, looking for that information right then that was going to be most useful for the animal, because, you know, I was packing and had other things to do. I didn't have all day to run worksheets. So there's a lot of ways to do radionics when you're using the information. So energy may be added through vibration. This is one that always is very meaningful for our farmers and our gardeners. People say, well, you know, and my favorite with them is in the class when you start talking about color and light, and you say, well, how many people here believe that we can do important things with color and light? And they fold their arms and look at you sideways a little. And at that point I say, okay, well, I tell you what, next year we're going to plant all your seeds in a cave and see how that goes. And they all get it because, you know, you see right away, it's a classic example that everybody understands, that light from millions of miles away can come here and cause this miracle of greenery that we have on our planet. And important to note that plant is God's perfect antenna for that situation. Anybody ever had a weed come up in their garden or in a ditch or all down the road or anywhere you look practically? Nobody planted those seeds. They have that plant is the perfect resonant antenna for that mix of soil chemistry, water conditions, and the sunlight that's coming down. And that's why it's there. It just, the only reason we call it as a weed is because it's uneconomic to us in our paradigm. This is the other classic example, you know, that the opera singer can deliver that resonant frequency and break shatter the wine glass. And that's a real thing too. And again, if we were in a different room, I could show you a YouTube video where some physics students at MIT put a speaker and, you know, up the resonance and literally shatter the glass just like you. It's not a myth at all. It's a pure reality. And there we go. So what my father brought to the table when he started his collaboration with Hieronymus in 79 was at that time, state-of-the-art knowledge of solid-state amplification. Hieronymus was a guy of the 20s and 30s, and so his amplification was all based in the tube era, and that was how they came together. You can see on the left there, that's a close-up of the single-stage amplifier. It's the same kind of amplifier you would have found in a 60s transistor radio that you think of like a kid holding to his ear on the beach in a, like a, what were those movies with Sally Field, and they were all on the beach and that kind of thing, Gidget Goes to the Beach sort of movies, beach blanket movies. Same exact transistor circuit, nothing esoteric about it. And then you see a much bigger motherboard that's in our big workstation amp, and they have, along the bottom there, you can see four repetitions of that same amplifier, so you get a much bigger signal out of it. You'll also see an antenna coil there. That flat pyramid is how Dad called it, and then there's a circuit, some other things there that we'll cover at another time. And this is where we get back to this idea of energy coming through vibration. Instead of using the sun, we're using a radio wave as a carrier wave to send out the frequency information that we want to build that resonance back at a distance, because radionics is action at a distance, and using a radio wave to send that out. Likewise, stepping back just a bit to talk a bit about a tiny bit about the history, Dr. Abrams was the first person recognized to discover the idea of using an electronic device to do radionics. He was the first one to produce an instrument. His earliest instruments were analysis only. He was just looking at the relative resonance state of the different things that were in the well there. This is very simplified, but coming along later, Hieronymus, he was the one who gave us the idea of using variable capacitors. The Abrams instruments were resistance-based, so when you set a dial, it was so many ohms of resistance, which is one way to find resonance, but you're taking a tiny signal and making it smaller when you put it through a resistor. And what Hieronymus and with Wigglesworth, another fellow named Wigglesworth, their big contribution that they're recognized for today is using capacitors, which take a tiny signal and make them bigger, easier for the average user to be able to detect and feel and sense and all that sort of thing. There's a bit of the patent. I'm not going to read all that to you, but it's readily online. If you search for the Hieronymus patent, it comes right up. And there's his original single bank instrument. Likewise, Delawar was with his wife Marjorie, George and Marjorie Delawar in the UK. They were radionic researchers in the 50s and 60s. That's when they really had their heyday, isn't that right? In the 40s, really. Ludi is an expert on the Delawar system in particular and could give a whole several-day class about that. But there have been a lot of different instruments that came about this different ways. Mattiota, Don Mattiota, he just passed away earlier this year, and his instruments, much more like the Hieronymus style, variable capacitors, and his instrument was really especially popular here in the United States, but then also in Australia. And then there's our little instrument. Get back to the whole idea of radionic instruments as radios. Now, one thing that we've come to, one big mystification that we've totally eradicated over the last couple of years, we found a new way to do that antenna, the antenna for our radio where we make our broadcast. And one thing that's always been very woo-woo in the when you start talking about radionics is when you this whole idea that you're rubbing on a rub plate and you're getting a reaction and getting this information. And in my course of just trying to write a newsletter article, I found an article in Science 1953, just 4 years after Hieronymus's patent. You know, Hieronymus described the rub plate, this reaction plate that you rub your fingers on, and when you get those resonance points, you feel a stick, is usually how it's perceived. You can feel it in different ways and in different parts of your body, but you get that some kind of resonance. And what we discovered was that if you have an insulating surface, whether that's plastic or glass or some other insulating material, if you put a field underneath it, whether it's an electrical field or it can be a sonic field, a mechanical wave, as that field changes, the perception to someone running their fingertips, which is of course an electrostatic device, we're all electrochemical creatures by the mobile meat box here, that sensation would change. And so here it was just 4 years later, nailed down in the premier mainstream science journal of that time and today, the journal Science. This is a scientist who noticed the old style pull light bulbs, where you pull a chain and the light bulb is just there on a cord. And he noticed that it felt different to him on that little brass casing if the light was activated or whether it was inert. And that's where they came to this knowledge. So, of course, they took that idea and ran with it. And guess what? Everybody in here probably has a device in their pocket that looks at the changing electrical surface and says, oh, this electrical current, instead of being, we're looking at the instrument is listening for us to put a new signal on the glass plate, this insulating surface, and it recognizes it and says, oh, they must want the iTunes to come up, and so that's a switch to, you know, go run some software. It's exactly the same. That's one giant piece of radionic mystery that we've been able to do away with. It's the exact same set of equations that they... Now it's its own whole field of haptic technology. And the thing that's supposed to be coming next for the 3D immersive environment is that you'll have gloves on, and the computer, as you're flying your virtual spaceship, the control panel will change as you put your fingers on this tablet. The computer will send different signals that make you feel like you're pushing a button or pushing a lever or whatever. It's exactly the same. It's the same equation flipped backwards. We're listening to the instrument. In the case of the phone or the computer is listening to us. So that was a tremendous breakthrough. Unplugged one of the big elements there. That's just in greater detail. It says the study of surface haptics focuses on tactile interactions between a fingertip and a physical surface. There exist many tactile displays that successfully render haptic environments explorable by a human fingertip on a surface. That's 2 years ago, Mechanical Engineering, Northwestern University, doing research on handicap, you know, to make handicap accessibility at a higher level. That's not radionics, it's not, you know, some woo-woo science at all. It's total mainstream stuff, so it's really thrilling to find that information. And there's even the diagram that was in their journal, where you see that insulating surface, and they've got the equations all worked out. And I'll leave that to guys like Daniel Taylor to do the math. But it was just so striking to have that new information. Now, on a radionic instrument, we see the opposite. As we take the lid off there, we see it's a 16-gauge speaker wire that's looped back through to and reconnected to itself to turn it into a Mobius coil. So you get a feedback loop. As our radio is sending out its amplified signal from the actual little box, we go into that coil, and it's very much like the UHF antenna, loop antenna that used to be on the back of all our TV sets. And there's our insulating surface. It's just black acrylic plastic. Hieronymus himself, in one of the great USPA tapes, talking about the history of radionics, he said it's exactly the same. When we get that stick, when we get that resonance point, it's the feedback point for that circuit, which is to say, we've all been in the experience where somebody's up on stage and they're talking and everything's fine, and they wander too close to the speakers, and what do you get? You get that terrible squeal that is, oh, everybody cringes. You get that big resonance right there. The exact same thing is happening. We're taking whatever you've got in that input well, whether it's the sample of the cat, that's building a certain amount of resonance, whatever reagents we put in there, whatever affirmations we put in there, all of those have their own resonance. And then we're going to turn a variable resistor on the front of the instrument, not the tuning dials, but there's just a resistor. It's a 50,000 ohm resistor. It starts at zero, and as you turn that dial, more and more resistance is added. And when you get to that feedback point where the input equals the output, you get feedback. But we feel it under our fingertips instead of hearing it with our ears. That's what the stick is. That's right out of Hieronymus's mouth, 1983. Here lately we've moved to, we still provide the basic old-fashioned two-wire rub plate. What you see there is our perfect, what we call the perfect spiral antenna. The spiral itself was patented by Tesla. It's a bifloor coil antenna, patented by Tesla himself in 1894. Again, we didn't invent this at all. It looks like one coil, but in fact, well, there it is. There's Tesla's instrument, Tesla's diagram from the patent. And so there's a diagram that shows how it all fits together. The radionic instrument, you have the input device, that's where we're going to put our sample of the banana or our photograph or some other kind of witness. We've got our tuning circuit in which we might tune into the calcium level, the magnesium, all these different elements that resonate on different frequencies. And then we've got that intensity measurement, that's that variable dial. And then all we've done now is analysis, again with zero power, nothing is plugged in, we're just the natural resonance that comes out of whatever you put in the well. By the strength of the universe, you know. I once had a class where somebody said, well, a lady asked me, well, I don't see how these things can work without power. And I said, well, I don't see an extension cord attached to you. And that's really it. You know, the energy comes from, where it comes from is really a discussion for philosophy and maybe a beer to fuel that along. But we almost don't care. What we care is that it's really there. And then, but we can take that signal and then amplify it and put it in a scalar antenna and broadcast it back to the subject. You see there's a dotted line to the operator, and that's where the focused intent comes in. You know, we talk about radionic instruments having first been discovered in 1906 or whatever, but in fact, the power of the focusing mind has been well known for, you know, countless eons, since people could focus on things. And it takes different shapes and to fit in different paradigms. Sometimes we think of it as prayer. Sometimes we think about it in terms of, like there were a run of books here recently, like The Secret or whatever, Wish It Into Being, that sort of thing. That's all focused intent. That's the idea that we can build resonance. You know, if you muddle your way through Tom Bearden's physics, he'll say that the whole universe at that pure energetic level, if you introduce a resonance, that it will carry and amplify that thing, and then all at once we're moving from having one part per million to having 10 parts per million to having 100 parts per million. And then all at once you can literally, if you could do that quickly, that you could manifest something right out of the naked air from pure energy to a chair sitting in front of us. Again, there's Tesla's coil. Here's what it looks like in our antenna. That's that same perfect spiral. And I show it in green and black here, so it's much easier to see what's really going on. What makes a scalar antenna a scalar antenna? And so if we put our finger on that black lead and follow it all the way around, you could see we're going in the clockwise direction till we get to the center, and then there's a silver mica capacitor right there. But any energy worker will tell you that there's the difference between clockwise and counterclockwise. One direction we're adding energy, the other direction we're removing or releasing energy. So if we follow our black lead all the way to the center, and then we jump through the capacitor and then go into the green lead, now we're going counterclockwise. So we go from clockwise to counterclockwise. So we're both adding energy and removing energy from essentially the same physical space at the exact same physical time. And it's my belief, this is not something that's proven, we're not going to have any scientific articles to back this idea up, but it is my belief that the unscrewing and screwing down of this 3D realm we think of as reality at the same time causes a hole to open, that we literally open a hole in reality and allow our signal to get back to the energetic realm that is in all of us and everything. I don't think it's any coincidence either that the other dual spin coil antenna that we all have a lot of is, of course, the DNA, RNA molecule that is in every cell of every single living thing in the world. You notice those red and blue stripes, one is going counterclockwise, one is going clockwise, and then collection of proteins that bind them across, those little ladder steps, that's what determines whether it's a carbon cell or, you know, what kind of cell that manifests and whether you're looking at a cat or a dog. To me, that's what set the frequency as this energy comes through. comes through that DNA molecule that all of us have and is in everything. I really believe that it's this relationship that allows us to do action at a distance. Because, again, if you go back to Tesla, Bearden will tell you that with the clockwise and the counterclockwise, you're canceling out the directional components and leaving only the energy. And so the energy can go right back to the energy. So with a radio, if I were going to set up a little tiny radio, like our instruments are just have just enough broadcast power to mess with your garage door opener if you're in the garage. There's no way that Hieronymus would be able to take the vital signs of the Gemini astronauts as they orbit the Earth, as he was able to do way back in the 60s, without having some kind of a trans-dimensional thing going on. And the thing is, it's not that I'm broadcasting from me to Daniel, it's that we're all plugged into the same energy source. The resonance that I create goes into that energy source that he is also connected to. And so instantaneously we have action across that distance when we have that exact same matching pattern to work with. That is the key. That DNA over there is the key that ties me to Daniel and not everybody. And it, in this case, it's a metaphor rather than a physical thing, but the cell phone is also a great example of that. We all have cell phones. If I call my wife right now, every phone in the world doesn't ring. It only rings because we've put that in right coding information, those 10 digits that say, hey, I'm looking for this one woman in Athens, Georgia right now, and not everybody in the world. Likewise, it's the DNA, the unique collection of DNA that make each of us individuals that make that information instantly transferable, but only to that one person. Now, it's interesting, she's a triplet, so she's a clone, she's an identical triplet, and so the Institute of Further Study is going to be to look at how these things interact across three people who, they're a little different, but a lot of that DNA chain is exactly the same, so that'd be an interesting test to move forward. But that's my understanding. I don't have a science article to back that up, but that's my understanding after 10 years of coming back into this of how we can actually achieve action at a distance based on really what I learned from Tesla, Bearden, and my father, and then my own research on top of that. 10 minutes. Okay, so that's our headquarters back in Lakemont, Georgia. That's where Ludi was talking about. That facility was started in 83 and finished in 84, and ever since it's been the business. Nobody's ever lived there. It's always been what we these days call KRT, but what Dad started as Interdimensional Sciences or Dimensional Sciences, those two companies. We reorganized ourselves after he passed away at the advice of the lawyers and the accountants. So anyway. And that's really it. That is a quick look under the hood. And so we've got a few extra minutes, and I wanted to throw it open to any questions. Tim?
Yeah, you said your wife is an identical triplet?
That's correct.
Are you sure you married the right one?
Well, it's a funny story. We met in college, and we met in physics class, and I just, there was only her in the class as far as the three of them, and so... I was riding the bus one day, riding a campus bus the first time I saw all three of them, and then I nearly fell out of my chair. And then I came to the awkward situation of I would see one or two of them, way over there, and I wouldn't be sure which is which, and so I would run hide, which was my shows you where I was as a Lothario back in those days. But anyway, I've got her tattooed now, so I've always got you can always get back to that. Anything else? Did anybody have a question? Sir?
Yes, I appreciate you explaining this in detail because I've always wanted to understand more about the mechanics and how it actually works. Now, when you take the object, an object of some kind, and put it in that well,
yes.
You describe that there are there's a copper coil that is picking up something. Now, is the object, since everything vibrates, and I think that's pretty well understood by most people, is it emanating an EM wave of some kind the coil picks up, because that coil is picking up something, and then you said that that the circuit amplifies it, and then I can understand all that.
Right.
But the object itself, is it emanating an EM wave of some kind, or is it emanating some other vibratory wave of some kind that maybe is not part of the same spectrum?
That's a great question. So for the record, the question was basically what kind of field when we look at a Carillion photograph, or when we put, you know, when we put our finger in the well and have it hooked up to the oscilloscope, and you see your own field show up on a, you know, regular oscilloscope, what kind of field is that? And I'm certain that it is at least a magnetic field. We're bioelectric creatures; we give off an electrical field. Some animals are even evolved to work with that field, like sharks. Very famously, their final, you know, inner sense, smallest, finest sense of attraction is looking for that EM field coming off of the fish or whatever they're, you know, going to be their dinner. Whether there's anything else is really the interesting question, and to that I really don't know. Ludi, do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, one of the things I like to tell students is that the witness or the sample, you're not testing the sample. You're actually testing through the sample. So you're picking up you're actually picking up a pattern that you can work through it. And so even when you're doing an analysis, that's why you can use a sample that was taken weeks before and get present time readings on it. And so you're working through the sample. So in a way, it has aspects that are like a hologram.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I was thinking, too, that there might be, I'm sure that a number of people here probably have heard about biophotons. Fritz Popp in Germany worked with biophotons a lot. But I'm beginning to think that perhaps, and biophotons are not part of the EM spectrum. They're a different phenomenon.
Okay.
You know, they've been proven to exist, and things have been written up even in the standard literature. But I'm wondering if maybe biophotons might be what is emanating from there, as well as some of the holographic aspects that Ludi just alluded to.
My gut sense is that it's a multidimensional, whatever that is. It's more than just the one thing, and I don't have any knowledge about biophotons, so I can't comment on that. But I know it is something that we can get to show up right on a regular plain Jane oscilloscope like you'd buy from an electronic shop. Naturally, I think there's more to it than that. But at that point, that's, again, for the Institute of further study. Ma'am?
I had a question about how you showed the coil.
Yes.
Separately from the other devices.
Yes.
And I saw also in your booth that they're separate things. And how is it that the coil works separately from the other things?
Well, when it's all set up, as you would use the instrument, they would all be connected. So they're all tied together. As far as the instrument is concerned, it's all one circuit. Mm-hmm. As a matter of convenience, really it was for convenience and flexibility, so that if, like for most of us, a little sample well with a 3-inch cylinder there is plenty of sample space. With the farmers, they prefer that larger one that was in the picture that's actually 8 inches in diameter, so that they can grab a plant, you know, a cutting off of a corn stalk or whatever, and put the whole thing in there in a plastic bag or in a Pyrex glass or something. So that'll give you the flexibility to use one or the other without having to buy a whole new instrument or, you know, just as an equipment dealer, to make it more flexible so that everything works with everything. Nothing that you buy is all at once not compatible with that other thing. But as far as how they'd be plugged in, literally there'll be one lead will tie to the top of that coil, goes over and plugs into the input circuit on the instrument, and then the other lead goes to the other likewise. And so it's a whole flowing circuit all the way through once you get the whole thing going like that. You couldn't really just have a well sitting by itself and get anything useful out of that.
about those little coils that you had in the little glass.
The little Betar coils, yes. Those are, well, you know, what we really came down to after that, you know, a couple years ago when we started doing our perfect spiral gold-plated antennas was that same antenna, that same dual spin coil antenna is in every product we make. And, you know, Dad came from the era where they might come burn your house down, or they might, you know, tar and feather you men in black suits and all that stuff. And thankfully, that era is pretty well over. So he didn't ever want to talk about what was under the hood. And to me, this is the information age. We have to share so that the more and wider the information is shared, the less it would matter if they did come burn me out someday, you know. And let alone buying into that whole fear paradigm. I'm just not, you know, come and get me. Here I am. There's no hiding, so you might as well just be right out front. So those are just simply just that coil, literally just that coil. And then the what made me realize was we use those as a passive energy lens in that Betar table, like that our sound table that's there, positioned above each speaker about an inch, inch and a half, is one of those coils. And in that case, it's not a live circuit at all. We're not running a signal through those tracings like a like that we do with an instrument. Instead, the speaker is producing both the sound wave, which is a mechanical wave, and then also, you know, every speaker has a big magnet. That's what makes the cone jump. And so there's a magnetic field that comes up. And so if you're playing a particular frequency through the speaker and then put that coil, we're taking both. It turns it into a multidimensional thing instead of just a mechanical wave and a magnetic wave. Now we have both of those, but we also put that dual spin on the information as well so that we can affect that DNA more directly. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
On a practical basis, those little coils, you can use them as little pocket dowsers. You can use them as energy lenses. I invite you all to go to our table and just hold one over your chakra or any place that hurts, and you got to go vertically to kind of find the resonance point, find that focal point, and when you get to that focal point, you can feel it. You can feel it start to sing, or you start to feel that release start to happen. Sir?
Yeah, can you relate all that to the Orgon? And most of the Orgon I've seen does have that copper coil in there.
Yes.
And I've also seen some of the Orgon that don't have the copper coils. So
that's right.
Are the ones with the copper coils more effective?
Well, it's almost two different things. Like your classic orgone accumulator. Orgone is, depending who's defining it, is a term for life energy or universal energy, that sort of thing. The classic orgone accumulator, the oldest example I know of is the Ark of the Covenant. One of the very few things that is spelled out in great detail in the Old Testament of how that thing is built, its dimensions, that sort of thing. But it's basically the idea that you have layers of wood, layers of gold, layers of wood stacked up on top of each other. That's a capacitor. An orgone accumulator is a capacitor that allows the natural energy to build to get stronger and stronger. In our case, with our little variable plate capacitors, instead of wood, it's that gap between those little plates. It's the air gap that provides the insulation, and then of course the aluminum fins are the conductive. And as you feed a signal to that thing, they literally build up on the surface. A couple minutes.
It's
we're right there.
Yeah.
All right, but that's an orgone accumulator. Ours is really taking that same energy and putting a spin on it, a very specific spin. Well, I'm out of time. I'm going to be doing on Sunday in the evening an actual hands-on thing where we'll connect a bunch of antennas and we'll put stuff in the wells and we can all feel the differences. And you can, if you've never had your hands on it, it's an opportunity to do that at none or minimal cost anyway, to literally get your hands on it and see if you can get a stick and see how it feels. It's a very personal thing. In all the classes that I've taught and with all the people that I've, you know, it's always the challenge, brand new person right out of the blue, are they going to be able to feel that sensitive, subtle thing? And I'd say it's a couple out of 100 that won't do it and won't be able to feel it. Most people can jump right into it. And if you're already an energy worker or sensitive to that sort of thing in the first place, it should be a snap for you. But this is that'll be an opportunity to try for yourself, and then Monday and Tuesday we'll do an actual thing where we really practice and go through the whole process of how you can use radionics to test what's missing from your soil, what kind of resonance, like I did with the cat, literally, how did I do that, how were the switches set, the whole process so that everybody can get familiar. But thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm so grateful to be here, and I'm grateful to all of you.
For people who are just getting into radionics, and also those who are, who is an ongoing learning experience, it's so good to hear other different people speak from their point of view. So it's very, very valuable. We'll be having another speaker who's a well-known practitioner with radionics, and we'll get another view.